This is, huh? This is a super scope. That's normal?
Yeah, you wait for a while because this is.
Yeah. Okay, now yeah, wait until that's over.
Yeah, I can push it down. Okay. I can hear from the other room. Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and this is Dialogue Conspiracy number 273, and it's June 13, 1977. I have a guest here to share information with you about Sirhan Sirhan this week, Dr. Edward Simpson, and I'm really excited to have him. I've been wanting him here for a long time, and he's never done a show with me on Dialogue Conspiracy. Before we get started with the show, I know a lot of you are anxious for my comments about James Earl Ray, and I'll just summarize them in a few words and cover that material more next week. I don't believe that James Earl Ray was 5 miles from the prison at the time that he was arrested. He was picked up there. I believe that he was successfully out of the state or even possibly out of the country. I believe that he was brought back because the House Select Committee and various people were outraged around the country and caught on to the fact of the tactical support that he had inside the prison. The prison warden was down in Texas at the time he allegedly escaped. The electricity was turned off that would have caught the men climbing over the fence. The yard wall was 10 feet high. They were supposed to be building a ladder with pipes. This is a maximum security prison with about one person watching. One warden, as I say, he was away, but the guards, there's one-to-one, a ratio of one-to-one, and there was a confrontation, a phony confrontation in the yard. They gave these large numbers of people, seven of them, time to go over, and one came down quickly, which looked as made it appear as if they would be caught fast. I called the Select Committee in Washington, D.C. this morning to ask if Ray was clean-shaven. The photographs appear that he was. It was supposed to have rained all night in Tennessee, and I asked if his clothing were wet, if he was drenched, or did they, in fact, deliver him in the early morning when it was dark, and then the guards brought him in, not the FBI, because they had too much pressure and couldn't get away with this particular escape, in quotes. There is a large fortune waiting for James Earl Ray. I've talked about on other shows. I mentioned it was May 23rd on Dialogue Conspiracy, a fund coming allegedly out of Credit Suisse. It involved the Permandex organization. I heard once that there was $1 million waiting for him in Rhodesia. And as James Earl Ray was quoted as saying, he likes money. We'll talk about it next week, but I do want to continue the continuity of last week's show because last week we talked about the mind control of Sirhan Sirhan. The headlines talked about a Manchurian candidate, and the two members of the Board of Supervisors from Los Angeles went to see Sirhan Sirhan, and I thought that a gentleman who has known him personally, worked with him for quite a period of time at San Quentin, who lives here on the peninsula and who is a close personal friend of mine, should be here to tell you about his experiences directly. And with that, we'll talk about the mind of Sirhan and the person known as Sirhan Sirhan. Edward, I'm glad to get you on the show. It's been a long time. I've been wanting you here to share your information with us. And I want to ask you, you know, a few questions, and then we'll just leave it wide open. You might explain your position at San Quentin at the time when you first met Sirhan.
I was a senior psychologist in San Quentin at that time. I had held that position approximately 6 years, and it was my duty, really, to examine men on death row, including, of course, your hands and hands.
Well, how long was he in prison before you met him?
He had just recently arrived. He had been seen before me shortly by the prison chief psychiatrist, Dr. Smith, who told me about his initial impressions. He was bothered. He said to me, "The picture I see in Sirhan does not match the picture I read in papers. he certainly doesn't seem to me a paranoid schizophrenic, as the psychiatrist testified at the trial, and told me to see Sir Han as often as possible to find out what the truth is.
He was kept in Los Angeles through the whole trial, was that?
Yes, and after that he was transferred to San Quentin, death row. They have two death rows there. He was in the tower, the old death row.
And of course the early story was that he was low on intelligence and not too bright.
Yes. Now, if you take my position, I worked for the prison and had seen thousands of inmates. Anytime a new man comes in, you do not start questioning anything. You don't have the time for it. You don't have anything else to base your doubts or assumptions. You accept what the official version is. That was the attitude with which I saw Sir Han. Of course, I was somewhat influenced by Dr. Smith's first impression. He, being highly experienced, he had been over 35 years as chief psychiatrist in San Quentin. He was very experienced and very conscientious, and he asked me to look into it. So the first time I started to wonder myself was after I administered the Han intelligence test. I found out that his IQ was very much higher than what the psychologist reported they had found during the trial. Over 30 points, they IQ was 98 and Maya was 129, which is what we call a very superior or the upper 1% of the population.
Quite respectable.
Yes. It, I should say, startled me. Why would professional people make wrong statements at a trial under oath? Why would they testify? I also found out that, of course, later, reading the trial testimony, every word said at the trial I had a chance to study from typed up records. They had also reported that Sir Han's IQ varied from below average to above average, which is an improper way of reporting IQ. IQ is always a point on a ladder, sort of telling you how far you can climb. It isn't that in some ways your IQ is lower or higher, it's just one number.
Well, I think that deception at the trial with Sir Han was identical to the Lee Harvey Oswald story, the Warren Report. Of course, there was no trial. Lee Harvey Oswald was murdered, but the personality profile that was created tried to make him a bumbling fool who couldn't be used by any organization as a conspirator because his reasoning was too low. It wasn't logical to use him because he had such a low mentality. Who would trust him, you know?
Right.
And
right.
Therefore, they had to falsify it. And as I spent 9 years cross-filing the Warren Commission hearings and testimony and exhibits, I found IQs, tests of Lee Harvey Oswald, and skills in all kinds of fields, Russian language, linguistics, and radio work, electronic work, photographic techniques, and security clearances of radar in the service. And yet the government body, the police, the officials, found the necessity to actually purge or falsify what they were saying about the person when it didn't hold up.
Yeah, during the trial, Sir Han was depicted for the press, and at the trial by the judge, he was handled as a crazy person, if I use the layman's term, a paranoid schizophrenic, so sick that he should have been always in a mental hospital, according to Dr. Diamond, who testified at the trial and saw him extensively. And the psychologist testified that he was barely average.
Well, you know, one of the problems at the trial that I've studied was I've just got first-hand information when Hugo Pinnell was on trial for allegedly killing a guard out here at Soledad, and I went to trial in Salinas. And he actually passed out in the trial and fell on the table, and he was drugged and doped. And this Leslie Van Houten was recently trialed, had a trial in Los Angeles, one of the Manson girls, a new trial. And she testified just a few weeks ago that she was given LSD through the entire trial while she was in prison. And they tried to blame Manson for influencing her mind. And yet when she's in a women's prison, the tide is security, the only one who could get her incoherent during a trial would be the prison officials. You can't bring your purse or anything, to visit these people. So Sirhan could be kept doped while in confinement, through food or water to make him appear a certain way, couldn't it? And then when the trial's over, he comes to you as a different person.
He was very much a different person as the picture given to the public by press and the professionals at the trial. Anyone who saw him in San Quentin could readily tell, and the cards, I'm sure, I could verify this, could really tell that he was as normal as anybody else there. That he certainly wasn't schizophrenic. He was rather thoughtful, reflective.
Incidentally, this program does get down to Soledad. The men are not allowed to make coat hanger antennas or wires or whatever they did, but it does get to some of the people there, and Sirhan is there at Soledad. Is there any special message, through the grapevine?
I would like to tell him.
What would you like to tell Sirhan, as an old friend and buddy?
Yeah, I would go back to our many conversations, and I started to enjoy them because he was rather intelligent and had read a good deal. I would tell him to remember what he kept telling me over and over. I must have an Arab lawyer. The conflict between the Jews and Arabs, and I somehow end up always someone with Jewish background representing me, and I want an Arab lawyer. Right now I find he has again a Jewish lawyer whom I have had no reason to learn to trust, just reading his statements. I wrote a long affidavit in Sirhan's behalf. I studied the trial transcripts, and today over phone, someone in L.A., Supervisor Baxter Ward's office, told me that his present lawyer hasn't even read it. He was asking from them for a copy of my affidavit. Why didn't he write to me directly? And they also said that Mr. Isaac, his present lawyer, does not want psychiatrist and psychologist to talk to Sirhan.
That seems very strange.
Very strange.
I have here San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle, dated September 28, 1975. That's just a little less than 2 years ago, and there's a picture of you on there, and it says, "One Man's Theory, a Hypnotist Set Up Sirhan," and the article goes on, "Was Sirhan some sort of Manchurian candidate hypnotically programmed to participate in the 1968 assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy and take the blame?" And then it goes on to quote you that he was prepared by somebody who was hypnotized by someone. Now, it's June of 1977, in May, just last week, the two members of the Board of Supervisors went to see Sirhan, and the headlines were reading "A Manchurian Candidate," and everything that they were saying in the newspaper you had said 2 years ago. Here you are, well-trained, a man of excellence in your profession. They know who you are. The president of the American Forensic Pathologist, Dr. Robert Jolling, was at your home.
Yes.
And they act as if they don't know how you are. This is the way they treat a lot of the research I do. They start these committees, and they know the work has been done, that there's documentation to back up the allegations, that professional people, and I consider myself a professional investigator at this point, having hit so many points of accuracy on the research. But with you particularly, you were saying all these things 2 years ago. Why the time lapse? Why aren't they at your door right now? What do you think the reason is?
I'm sure there is more than meets the eye, that things are not but they seem, as the old saying goes. While some appear to be trying to find the truth, others, I'm quite certain, are just as busy trying to hide it, because they may have some good reason for it.
Well, this happened just last week. The headlines of the New York Times said that the committee in Washington, D.C., the House Select Committee, investigating the case of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. They had produced nothing, no new evidence. They implied that Congress should take their money back when they've just been formed a few months. And the same way the media is suppressing that group back there, they suppress your information. Wasn't the major media going to interview you on this case when they went to see Sirhan?
Yeah, they sent a deputy named Larry Larson over who talked to me. And interestingly, thereafter, after the meeting, San Francisco Chronicle people called me, and United Press called me. A man named Mike Ellard from Los Angeles, representing United Press, called me and said, I want to see you. I have to have an interview with you on Friday. But
they never showed up.
They never showed up. Obviously, someone told him not to go and see me.
You become you become a non-person.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the media. Somebody up there is handling the media that these stories can't get through. If you say, just for 1 minute on national television, yes, I worked with Sirhan and he trusted me and we had rapport with each other, I'm absolutely convinced that they don't want him to have rapport with somebody like you. As you say, they throw in a Jewish psychiatrist or psychologist, and you have so much in common with him. You might talk about that too, how you built up that rapport with Sirhan.
Oh, I assumed Sirhan first thought that I was Jewish. I was quite sure from our conversations. And he kept what seemed to me testing me. Once he asked from me, what are the colors of Israel's flag? And ignorance sometimes can be an asset. I really didn't know. I knew there was a David star on it. And that's all I told him. After that, he seemed to believe that I wasn't
Jewish. Oh, he thought it was your national flag, the Jewish flag. Yeah.
Yes.
And, well, being a refugee in this country, you've been here a long time, but having been displaced, you had something in common with Sirhan.
We had a lot in common, I think. And therefore, we sort of developed a liking for each other. He had lost his homeland and ended up in a strange country, and so have I. Being an Estonian, Jewish-Arab conflict is rather remote to us. I have no emotional attachment to it. But I have very similar, strong conflict to live with myself. Estonians and Russians have always been deadly enemies. Russians are right now occupying my country. And I think we are facing the same issues that Israelis and Arabs right now face. We can't really even visualize how this conflict could really be constructively resolved. We don't see any real solution with Russians. There have been so many hard feelings over the past that we've reached beyond the stage of forgiving. I assume in my country, Russians in 1 year killed about 8% of the population.
Well, I read
and there's this sort of feeling in the background which we could share.
Well, I read a story of Sirhan, and a lot of people don't understand. They say, well, he was going to university or junior college in Pasadena, and they'd moved to this country, but I read a story that when he was just a young child walking down the street holding the hand of a very close friend, what was the year, 1948, when Palestine became Israel. So it was just before that, 46, 47. His friend was blown up, completely blown up and killed, shattered in front of him. And then the family all lived in one displaced room on the other side of town where they had some substance and position in the community. They all lived in one room. But he actually had the blood spilled, which is more than just fleeing with a family. It was very traumatic. Did he ever bring that up with you?
Yes, we did discuss. I could tell him that in my family, one of my uncles was sent to Siberia and died there. Another was sent there for 20 years simply because they were landowners.
See, one of the tragic things I think about counterintelligence and espionage, the things that I study, is that they take people who psychologically are ripe and use them as instruments, just like you cut up a grapefruit for breakfast. They're not people. They use their lives to cover.
Yeah.
You know?
Tehran comes from, I would say, out of an authoritarian system, and he is inclined readily to follow. Just the fact that he's now accepting a Jewish lawyer as his lawyer is, for me, in itself proof that he can be talked into easily. When he discovered during the trial, when he was examined by Dr. Diamond, that Dr. Diamond was Jewish, he got very angry, but he did nothing to change the situation. He went on working with him. He didn't really cooperate with him, but he could have simply fired him or told him, I don't want to work with him, but he couldn't do that. He couldn't stand up against authority and made himself heard enough, couldn't take initiative.
But I think the people around them don't give them the alternative of choices. You take somebody like James Earl Ray, they bring in Percy Forman, and they don't say, look, here's a man from the left and the right and the middle or black and white. No. They say, this is your lawyer. Do you want to be barbecued with the death penalty, or are you going to take Percy Forman? And he pleads guilty.
Yeah, yeah.
And Saran doesn't have the choice of psychiatrist, did he, at the time?
No, no. They are all sort of appointed for him. And I think it's so basic for our system that everybody in a conflict or in similar situation must have the right to choose his lawyer
or his doctor
right, and must have the right to fire his lawyer or reject his doctor. During the trial, at one point Sirhan's lawyer Grant Cooper, as I read his statements from trial transcript, was a ridiculous lawyer for Sirhan. He certainly wasn't on Sirhan's side. He just went long accepting everything of importance. During the trial, Sirhan very calmly, obviously, just reading from the transcript, said, I want to fire my lawyer. Now, to that, there was an outburst from the judge, who said pretty literally, shut up, to him, that if you don't stay quiet, I have you gagged and tied up.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of court is that?
The same thing happened to Jack Ruby. He testified to the Warren Commission in July of 64, that Melvin Belli, I didn't represent him, that he said he was crazy or had epilepsy. He said, I wanted to tell the truth. I wanted to get on the stand and tell what happened. And they wouldn't let him on the stand. Jack Ruby was never allowed on the stand. He was forced to have his lawyer, and he never could even say a word.
Yes. As I was talking with the deputy from Supervisor Baxter Ward's office, I said, I have no evidence for a conspiracy. I have many doubts about the things that went on, and I have some facts about very improper handling of a trial. The least your hands should have now is a new trial. People get new trials nowadays for very minimal difficulties technical problems during the trial. He has great many grounds to have a new trial, and he should have a new trial. He should have a new trial with his Arab lawyer, as he always wanted. He should have a new trial with an Arab psychologist or anybody else. He used to tell me that if I'm ever examined, I want you to do the examining from now on, and I will not accept anybody else. That he used to repeat several times.
Well, I think that it would be interesting for people that listen to the show maybe to write down to Los Angeles, the Board of Supervisors, just Los Angeles, California, and ask why Dr. Simpson is not seeing Sirhan, and why they're dragging their feet in this matter. I think, as old buddies, and he did trust you and told you how he felt, that you should have a right, and they should not bring in somebody new. You already have a rapport. I think it's a tragic mistake.
Well, if they do bring somebody new, you don't ever know who that person is and what his mission is or whom he represents.
He could even be hypnotized to say, yes, he did it.
Yes, and he could be maybe hypnotized by the same person who may have programmed him in the first place. I don't know who that is.
You don't know. That's a very good point.
If we touch the whole area of hypnosis, and let me go back to the first picture that was given to the public. The hand is a paranoid schizophrenic, means incurably insane. Essentially, that's what we mean by that label. Now, we know from all the evidence we need that you can never hypnotize a paranoid schizophrenic. They are too preoccupied, too suspicious. They would never usually consent. They often believe that they're hypnotized when they're not. They often believe that everybody around them is hypnotizing them. Sir Han, on the other hand, was exceptionally good hypnotic subject, something no psychotic, insane person can be. He was asking me to hypnotize him, which I didn't. I postponed it to the day when I was not allowed to see him. I wanted to first get information without hypnosis. He was practicing self-hypnosis. That seemed to be one of his major activities. He made up a circle. He said, I have a circle like that in my cell. I stare at it, and then I go in a trance, and I experience a lot of things. Now, to do such things, to be able to hypnotize yourself, you must be usually taught to do it. You don't pick it up from a book. And he obviously had a lot of training. By whom?
I don't know.
Somebody took the trouble and time to train him in self-hypnosis extensively.
You see, if it was an innocent kind of training, the doctor would step forward and say, oh, what a coincidence he came into my office. But before we went on the air, I brought up the subject that James Earl Ray had gone to this school for hypnosis, had been with a hypnotist in Los Angeles. But these names are unknown. It would be wonderful for historical purposes to find out if they had the same hypnotist in Los Angeles.
And who did it?
Who
was interested to train their hand to use self-hypnosis so well that it became one of his major preoccupations?
James Earl Ray, when he was arrested in London, running around after the killing of Martin Luther King, had books on hypnosis still with him. So evidently somebody still wanted him to be in that position, you know, hypnotizing himself.
Yes.
So he carried them with him. How about that book, RFK Must Die? Robert Kaiser wrote a book in which he commercialized with the cover and the script on the diary of Sirhan Sirhan. And every one of these telltale conspiracies, men who never left diaries before, just leave all the facts or so-called facts around. What about that?
Yeah. That's another point I became aware of it after I saw the handwriting samples printed in Kaiser's book, and I had a number of samples of Sir Han's handwriting. I had him take tests and write stories through a well-known test, the so-called thematic apperception test. And the handwriting is distinctly different. I would say, having had a lot of training in handwriting analysis, there isn't a chance, one in a million, that Sir Han wrote those additions to the notebooks. And the notebooks were used as a major evidence to convict him.
Did you save the papers? Could you take from San Quentin the papers that Sirhan did with you so that in a trial, if it came up, that you could testify that there was a different kind of writing, or did you have to leave them all there? His personal papers. Edward's laughing here. Yeah. I'll keep this. Okay, tell us, they can't see your smile. Maybe I asked the wrong question. You know I am an investigator. I'm sorry. Should we erase that one, or can you do you prefer not to comment?
I prefer not to comment.
Okay.
But I can prove beyond any doubt that those handwriting samples stem from different people.
Would you testify that at a trial?
Yes.
I think
Sir Han did not write. He did bring up the issue a number of times that asking who wrote those things, who forged them for you.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's really great that people that have listened to Dialogue Conspiracy for a long time, who know the program and how many shows I've done on these various people, you know, can have the opportunity to hear somebody who knew Sirhan personally and can tell you some of these things that I've been trying to share with you. Because he used to ask you a few years ago, where was he or did he do the crime, didn't he? He was asking you that a while back. He wasn't sure that he did it.
Well, there were actually like two people talking to me, if I think back to our conversations. In one hand, he used to recite, yes, I committed the crime. And he used to recite cliché type of statements over and over. I did it because the conflict between Jews and Arabs, and I was protecting Arabs' interests and so forth. But he never seemed to have any details to back up these statements, and he repeated them numerous times. Then at other times, particularly after he learned to trust me, he was very puzzled, concerned, I would say deeply concerned with the whole issue by asking me, I want to find out what really happened. I have no memory. I can't tell you what happened during the entire incident. I have no recollection whatsoever of what happened.
Well, Sirhan...
And he was so genuine about that.
He would ask you to help
yes,
him find out.
He would ask me to help him.
Well, there were four guns in the Ambassador Hotel.
I took notes, and I have some here with me.
Okay.
And these are exact,
exact
words,
words
from him. I don't remember what I did, but I know I wasn't myself.
This is...
I remember there was a girl who wanted coffee. She wanted coffee with lots of cream and sugar. So I gave her my cup and poured one for myself. That's the last I can remember until I was being choked and manhandled by the crowd.
This is Dr. Simpson, Sirhan, psychologist, who was working with him at San Quentin, reading notes of his experiences from Sirhan.
They broke my left hand's first finger. I had a lot of bruises in my face, and then the police came, took me to the police station. I went through the booking. I still did not know exactly what was going on. They were very friendly and brought me lots of coffee and were recording it. Then they took me to court, to a magistrate. There I first realized what had happened. They read the charges.
Is that common in a murder? If somebody went with the intent of shooting somebody, that they black out that way?
No, that's not common at all. It can happen, but it's not in this manner at all.
No.
I don't remember exactly. There was a lady judge, 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. She was wearing a robe. It seemed weird to me because I have never seen a woman judge in a robe. That added to the dreamlike state I felt. There was a judge, but she was a woman. It seemed funny to me. I couldn't believe it. As an Arab, this is more significant than for people here. Then they took me to the county jail and treated me for medical ailments and took a blood sample. This is funny. The district attorney first denied they had a blood sample, but when pressured by my attorney, Mr. Cooper, he did admit taking blood, but said they did not examine it for alcohol content. That's a lot of bullshit, I think. Then the lawyer started coming. This was June 5th, 1968. The trial lasted till January 69. The 6 months I was examined by doctors numerous times. Dr. Richardson saw me only once. Dr. Shore saw me only twice, but they wrote a great deal and testified a lot.
And so they wrote a great deal and testified a lot.
Yes.
And none of them really very sympathetic to the man's situation.
No, not really. They were Jewish doctors.
They were Jewish doctors.
And they had accepted that their hand had killed. The question was to handle it as a case of insanity, using what we might now call a lone ranger theory, a single individual doing it independently.
That's the way with
on his own.
Lee Harvey Oswald and Arthur Bremer, the Wallace shooting.
And that would settle everything, and nobody would ask any more questions, which would be a very convenient
theory. The deranged loner.
Yes.
Yeah. And with a little hint of internationalism because the family had been brought over here. Yeah. Well, the lack of proof that he wrote that diary would be interesting in a court of law, because I know in the case of Lee Harvey Oswald's famous diary, the original just doesn't exist or hasn't been seen.
I've heard it's been destroyed. They had used some chemicals supposedly for some testing, though you can't see anything.
Isn't that terrible? In 64, when Marina Oswald testified for the Warren Commission, they said, we hand you a copy of what is purported to be your husband's diary. And her first reaction was, where did you get it? You know, how did you get it? I never heard that Oswald's diary was destroyed. It was?
I don't know that.
Yeah.
There was never a handwriting analyst called in.
On the Sirhan case, at the trial.
Yes.
Well, you know that Grant Cooper, the attorney that was brought in for Sirhan, came right from John Roselli, the famous man who was found dead recently, another witness before the Senate committee investigating the Kennedy assassination. And Roselli had a lot of links with members of organized crime who could have influenced Sirhan at the racetracks.
Where
that's the area that he seems most lack of knowledge. His mind is gone in that area, isn't it? Around the racetrack. Do you have some more there that you want to read about Sirhan? You got some things there?
Yeah. He told me, whatever strange behavior I showed in court was the result of my outrage over Dr. Diamond's and other doctors' testimony. They were saying many things about me that they were that were crossly untrue, nor did I give them any permission to testify in my behalf in court. There was one other investigator who saw the addition to the notebook, these famous statements, many more will come, which were supposed to show that Sirhan planned this killing long time ahead. This crucial statement that one of the investigators said, having gone over it, that it doesn't seem to be Sirhan's handwriting, but nobody paid any attention
could
to
Sirhan
that.
Could Sirhan bring that up at the trial?
He didn't bring...
I think that's one of the reasons of keeping these people doped is that they really are not aware of the things they can use for their own defense, such as the Jewish psychiatrist or the diary that's planted. He didn't bring any of that up?
He could not bring anything that up. The Jewish Arab issue was clearly excluded from any discussion.
But the diary isn't a Jewish Arab issue.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the Jewish psychiatrist?
But just the issue that there could have been some political motivation on the background, that could not be handled at the trial or responded to. The only issue was to show to the world that here a crazy madman killed as a result of his insanity an important personality.
And then when you
and that's it.
Yeah, and then when you found him, he wasn't insane.
I started to wonder about a lot of things.
Well, I think it's pathetic that somebody there sitting in prison these 9 years or maybe for nine more, I think he has a date maybe in 9 years from now to get out, keeps asking to be hypnotized that he doesn't think that he killed Robert Kennedy, doesn't know the circumstances. Isn't it hard to live with that and not get bitter?
Yes. To put it mildly.
How does he keep his sanity there at Soledad? How does he accept the fact?
He was telling me that, we talked about that. He said he was reading Bible and Quran, and he did also say that if I would have to stay all my lifetime in prison, I'd rather be dead.
Of course, this is one of the big arguments I don't want to get into too much, because I know some of the points we don't agree totally on the death penalty, but I think that to take the life of people like James Earl Ray or Sirhan Sirhan or Charles Manson without fair psychologists such as yourself being able
trial,
to reach them,
I would
a
add
fair,
fair
trial.
Sirhan did not have a fair trial. It was a costly trial. Taxpayers had to pay a little fortune for it, but it was extremely short in truth.
Yeah, well, you know, if you get a death penalty back, who's to define a fair trial? There's people that actually believe, say, that the government investigated Kennedy's death or that the Watergate was a fair investigation, you know, by Leon Jaworski. These trials, they believe these men have had their day in court and therefore should die. Who sits there to monitor the trial?
We are touching on another subject which is so complicated and controversial. I always held a very strongly anti-death penalty view. I've been in war, I've seen people dying. When I worked on death row and saw some of the very actually brutal killers, I lost sympathy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've changed some of my mind there.
But how about these political killings? Say if you're a person has had actually no education, they're mentally deranged, they've done a mass murder, but when there's a political overtone, shouldn't they be kept alive to study?
It's like somebody killed a spouse. There should be never any death penalty because there are two parties involved usually. Well, there's something else involved that is not really a crime in a true sense.
But I think to take away the life of Sirhan, he just escaped it. He actually was on death row and could have been killed, and he's alive now, and he may be cleared completely. The physical evidence seems to indicate that he didn't even get a bullet into Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
How far can the law enforcement go in holding this case down now? Do you think there's any chance of his getting a new hearing or trial?
I don't think there will be any real breakthrough as long as he has his present lawyer. I became very disappointed listening to his present lawyer, Mr. Isaac. I recall during the famous Los Angeles Police Department's investigation of the bullets that were taken out of RFK, that a man named Harper first examined and found there are two different kinds of bullets with very clear markings. And then when the public pressure was put on the issue, essentially because of Harper's, who's a famous ballistics expert, Harper's work, the police department itself investigated. And we talked those days about it. I remember on TV I made the statement, and actually you stressed that too. It's like John Dean and John Mitchell investigating the Watergate. Obviously, the police department would not convict itself. And more than four different kinds of bullets were found thereafter. Yet the committee concluded that there was only one gun. They could have just as properly, based on the evidence, they could have concluded that there was, or there were four guns, or three guns, or two guns. They concluded what they wanted to.
They're still doing this.
Now, when it was over, Mr. Isaacs, their hands lawyer, and I'm quoting him from press, made the statement that this was a bad day for Sirhan, and he had nothing critical to say about that, I would say, phony police investigation.
I remember.
I expected him to be outraged and say something defensive, protective of Sirhan, and he didn't. He seemed to be like on the other side.
When Luke McKissick was carrying the case as his attorney, he was on the peninsula, and that's when the theory of the second gun really became prominent, that another gun had gone off in the Ambassador Hotel, and security guards standing behind him had shot his gun, and the bullet direction was consistent with being shot from behind the fatal shot. And Luke McKissick had a press conference. I still have the article, and unless it was misquoted, and I challenged him on it, he said, well, even if my client didn't kill Robert Kennedy, he came with the intent to kill. And, you know, with lawyers like that...
Now, McKissick, I have seen some of the correspondence.
Yeah.
Fought intensely to keep his client, Sirhan, at that time. And when another lawyer took it over, he became very angry with that other lawyer.
But all in all, he's had several, and nothing has really helped him too much.
Well, the results tell best. Sirhan is where he is, and the situation obviously hasn't improved in any way.
Yeah. Well, listen.
There's no one who has done anything to stress that he must have a new trial. That's the only thing that I would stress right now.
And also a good psychologist. Well, I want to thank you. This is Dr. Simpson, who's been with me today, who was at San Quentin with Sirhan as a psychologist, and worked with him, and they had a rapport and trusted each other, and been wanting to have you on a long time. I really appreciate it. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, KLRB, and we'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy. Thank you, and until next Monday, take care.
Out good. Sounded great. Good.
You mean your books have traveled the list and all that?
Oh, yeah. A lot of times it's hard because, there's people...